40WNBS.com presents The Neil Bradley Show.
Hi, welcome to the show. Today, Josh Platos, Washington Post contributor, will be my guest. I think it'll be an interesting show because Josh, who also covers Nebraska in his other job when he's not writing really fabulous articles, Josh does take care of covering Nebraska football. And man, what a game he was able to see with a victory over Michigan State, a packed house. I did see some of the highlights of that. Was not able to watch any live, but followed it along. It was a comeback victory there late. We'll find out his take on that. He did write an article on why LSU should beat Alabama. I actually thought they would too, but I'm going to talk with him about that. Can the Carolina Panthers run the table? We'll find out. And also, I want to get his thoughts on the Missouri situation. Kind of mixed views on that with a lot of people, and I understand that when I, you first hear that, the football team is not going to play anymore, and a few students want to go on strike. I have the hunger strike because they want the president canned. It's like, I don't know about that, but kind of looked at some of the way things were handled out there, and if those reports are true, I get it. I understand, where they're coming from. I really do. So whether you support one side of that, I understand the folks who say, hey, that sets a dangerous precedent. Will that trickle down to small things? Racism and not doing anything about it on campus, that's by no means small. But will that trickle down to where, hey, we'd like to get pepperoni and sausage pizzas in the cafeteria, and if we don't get it, we want the president to resign. Hopefully we don't see anything. It's the only time we've seen it, but there have been people throughout the ridiculous, and I understand the point. Is that now going to be something that we see when students don't get their way? Are they going to do this? And there are things worth fighting about, and again, this is not just 10 people there at Mizzou. There's a lot of folks. They had faculty jumping in on this. A lot of students jumped in on it. The football team, now, not from the reports we saw, not all the players were in on not playing the game, although they did seem to support the idea. But Coach Pinkel was behind it, and it was sort of growing support, and they were able to pretty much play a role in toppling a college president. But there's some ugly incidents. When you read about it, go into the details on what happened, that I can certainly understand the frustration where, look, I don't think you're doing enough. You're not responding well enough to this, and this is important to us, so important that we don't want you leading it anymore. We want someone else in there that will see that it doesn't happen. And if it does happen, you can't have a college president anywhere that's 100% responsible for every person on the campus. But what you can do is have a college president that, when something happens, will take action on that in an appropriate manner. That's what you can have, because you got 20,000 students somewhere. There's going to be some knuckleheads, and I don't mean students. You have 20,000 of anybody's in any city with 20,000, any gathering. It's the way it is. And some people, just pick up the paper, go online. There's a couple of moronic incidents on a daily basis. Not going to outlaw that, but you can have better responses to it. So I'm not a soapbox guy on that. I'm really not, but I do understand those who say that sets a dangerous precedent. But I certainly also understand those who says that it was an ineffective response to some of the really big issues. So I get it. Anyhow, I'm going to get Josh's take on that rather than me rattle on about that. We'll see what he says about that. Before we get to Josh's interview, and then after that, I have a really happy Mitch Stewart. The Hey Coach show aired last night. Mitch was in a great mood earlier in the day. He had his press conference. We'll bring you the audio from that, the questions. So he talked about the win over Tennessee State, this week's game against Eastern Kentucky. That will follow Josh Platos. Before I get to Josh, though, we want to tell you about Murray State women's soccer. They're in the NCAA tournament. Yesterday, they had their pairings party, the watch party, and they found out they're going to Ole Miss. They're going to play at Oxford against Ole Miss Friday night at 7:30. Opening round action of the College Cup. Murray State 1-1 against SEC opponents this year. They beat Mississippi State in the season opener, and I believe they lost 3-0 to Tennessee. That also was early in the season. The Rebels roster features six seniors that achieved a 13-5-2 record, led by SEC first-teamer Addie Forbus. She scored 11 goals this season. Ole Miss, one of six SEC teams to make the College Cup field. The Racers in the tournament for the first time since 2009. They lost that year 2-0 to Virginia Tech. So our congratulations to the Racers and Coach Jeremy Groves and his staff. We wish them the best of luck as we follow along with them this week as they head to Oxford, Mississippi. Congratulations again. Sam Bedard wins the Sam Bedard Award. That's what we're calling it. Setter of the Week. She wins it almost every week because she's so good. Murray State Volleyball Sam Bedard, the OVC Setter of the Week. 54 assists in the win over Tennessee Martin. She dished out 41 assists against SEMO. She had 5 kills in each match. A double-double in the win over the Skyhawks, adding 11 digs as the team. Murray State hit 221 in the two wins. The Racers back in action tomorrow night at Austin Peay. If they win, they clinch an outright regular season title for the second straight year. College basketball, Louisville held off a late charge by Kentucky Wesleyan last night to wrap up exhibition play with a 77-68 win at the KFC Yum Center. Damian Lee, 19 points. C.J. Blackwell led the Panthers with 22. Louisville opens the season Friday against Samford at the Yum Center. We'll find out about the St. Louis Cardinals. They hope to haul in some hardware tonight. Major League Baseball will announce the 2015 Gold Glove winners on ESPN2 this evening at 6. Cardinals catcher Yadier Molina, a finalist at his position and seeking his 8th career honor. Outfielder Jason Hayward also is a finalist. Stay tuned. Josh Plenos is next. Again, after that, we will have the Mitch Stewart audio from the press conference on Monday.
Racer football comes back to Stewart Stadium for the final home game of the season at 1 p.m. Saturday. Bring a packaged children's toy for one free ticket into the game. Join us Saturday morning at 11 for Racer Volleyball Senior Day. Also, Racer Basketball officially tips off the season with a home doubleheader beginning at 5 p.m. Friday. You won't look back at the games you watch from the couch. For tickets, call 270-809-3000 or visit GoRacers.com.
Welcome back to the program. As promised, Josh Plenos is my guest. He wrote 3 articles last week that I'm going to talk to him about. But before we get to any articles, he was on hand for one of the big upsets of the weekend as Nebraska took down an unbeaten in Michigan State. Josh, I know just from following it along on Yahoo on the scoreboard, which that's how I had to do it, it was an amazing game. Tell us about not just the game, but the atmosphere there.
It's honestly unlike anything I've ever experienced at a sporting event. I mean, to see that kind of crowd, and you know, everyone knows about the nation's leading sellout streak that Nebraska has. They've been playing in front of packed houses for decades now. But to see that kind of turnout for a team that was 3-6, and to see everyone get so excited over a matchup with an undefeated team. And then for the team to win, it was just it really kind of validated Mike Riley's season. If we're being honest, this team still might not go to a bowl game, which would be the third time in more than 40 years that Nebraska would have missed out on a final bowl game. But last Saturday's win was really enough for the fans, I think. Just to see that team come from behind in the fourth quarter. Fourth quarters have really been the Achilles heel of this unit all season long. They've had 5 of their 6 losses are by 5 points or less. Came on the opponent's final play of the game. But to see the team put it together and put together a last minute miraculous drive, which culminated in a 17-yard touchdown pass with less than 20 seconds to go. It was just terrific. The crowd was incredible all night long. After the game ended, fans stayed in the stadium for at least 20 minutes, which is very unusual because, team personnel does a really good job of trying to get the players off the field as quickly as possible for us to do, their post-game coverage. But You know, last Saturday's win was just too big. And, you know, I think that the players deserved, you know, their moment in the sun and their moment to, you know, kind of soak in a big-time win. And they were able to do so. And it was just a terrific atmosphere top to bottom. And, you know, maybe they'll maybe we'll see something similar in 2 weeks when we take on Iowa.
This is the amazing part about this. It's the fan base, too. Remember, they're the ones that have been continuing to sell it out. This is kind of a reward for them, too. Hey, thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for coming to the games. Here's a little something for you, because that's kind of the reaction that I saw from the fans there.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, this fan base probably is the same fan base that suffered through the Bill Callahan era. You know, and if they were able to sell out the Memorial Stadium in 2007 when this team, you know, was losing to no-name teams by a significant margin, you know, not just five-point losses, but getting blown out, you know, repeatedly, beating itself repeatedly. You know, if they were willing to tough that out, they sure weren't going to, you know, miss last Saturday when they had the chance to knock off, you know, an unbeaten Michigan State team that really had its eyes set on the college football playoff and now is all but, you know, eliminated from that contention if the schedule breaks right. But yeah, you know, talk about a cherry on top of a pretty dismal season. And, you know, like I said, they've got another shot to end an opponent's undefeated year with Iowa in 2 weeks. And, you know, if they win that game, they're, you know, into a bowl game. So, you know, I think a lot to look forward to for you know, this program and for Mike Riley in the post-game press conference. I've never seen a coach that happy or that relieved, rather. You know, he has just gone through a lot of trials and tribulations, and I'm sure he's felt like he's aged 10 years just because of, sure, you know, how these games seem to be ending. But, you know, on Saturday night, Nebraska came out on top, and, you know, the fans are really excited heading into Rutgers this weekend.
I know going into last week, the big game on the schedule was of course, LSU and Alabama. I had been asked what I thought. I thought LSU would go down there and get a win. I got to read your article on why LSU should beat Alabama. It pretty much validated everything I thought. And then I sat on TV when I got home and watched. I just couldn't really believe what I was watching. It was a pretty dominant performance by Alabama. What happened in that one to turn the tide for the Tide?
I think the biggest issue, the biggest inconsistency I had with my my reporting on that article is that I just didn't think that Alabama's defensive line was going to be as formidable as they were. You know, we haven't really seen them get gashed all too much, but LSU's offensive line has been consistently great. And, you know, an above-average unit that gives Leonard Fournette the holes to run through, and obviously everyone knows he's a great, you know, yards-after-contact runner. But, you know, that offensive line has really done a lot of the damage for him. And they just could get no push up front Saturday night. Alabama was, you know, just consistently in the backfield before Fournette even had the ball. And, you know, you can take the best running back in the world and put him behind toothpicks, and, you know, he's not going to get any yardage. So, you know, that's just kind of the nature of the game. If you win the battle up front, a lot of times, especially if you're a run-heavy unit, that decides the game. And, you know, Bama didn't really gash LSU all that much. I know Derrick Henry had you know, a pretty solid game, but really that was kind of what we were expecting from both running backs, and it just so happened that, you know, the person who would probably win the Heisman Trophy wasn't able to get going, and that's not on him, really, because I read today that I think 30 of his 31 yards that he had in the game, which, you know, by the way, is, you know, far and away the lowest total he's had all season, 30 of the 31 yards were after contact. So you can just kind of imagine what it's like to, you know, get the ball and then be blasted by these, you know, five-star defensive linemen who are all going to go cash NFL checks someday. You know, you can understand why the offense couldn't find any consistency. Brandon Harris hadn't had a turnover all year and, you know, throws an interception as soon as the second half starts. And, you know, that didn't really, you know, get them off on the right foot. So much credit should be given to Alabama. You know, they looked as strong as any team defensively as I've seen all year. And, you know, maybe they'll be able to get into the playoff because of it.
May do it. They have a tough challenge against Mississippi State. We shall see. Two unbeatens going at it in the Big 12, TCU and Oklahoma State. That one was a little more lopsided than I thought, although at times I kept waiting for TCU's defense to get exposed this season, and finally it looks like they did against Oklahoma State.
Yeah, you know, early in the year, I really thought that TCU had a shot to get into the playoff. I think a lot of people kind of subscribed to that notion, but I that defense has just been picked apart, game in and game out. And not only that, but they've been, that's an injury-riddled roster. They had a ton of turnover between last year and this year, lost a number of significant players, and then it just seemed like, each week, even if they were winning, they were losing, a starting cornerback or a starting linebacker or, two defensive linemen. It just seemed like it always came at a cost. And, at a certain point, you're going to run out of, high-quality personnel, and I think Oklahoma State really exposed them. To be honest, though, Oklahoma State's offense is as high-octane as any in the country. I mean, it's kind of incredible that teams like Oklahoma State and Baylor just seem to go for pay dirt each and every play. And, you see some of these games like Florida and Vanderbilt, for instance. That game was 9-7.
Right.
Oklahoma State had, more points than both of those teams combined nearly at the end of the first quarter. So, you just kind of get like a view of what, Big 12 football is becoming, and it just seems to be more and more explosive each week. But Oklahoma State's offense is terrific, and, obviously they probably felt a little disrespected being 14th in the country despite being undefeated last week. But, they're gonna move up, and they obviously have a shot if they run the table to get into the playoff.
Another unbeaten fell when Memphis lost to Navy, but that's not a bad Navy team that beat them by any stretch as they pull into the top 25 this week, and Memphis gets a chance to redeem themselves at unbeaten Houston.
Yeah, I talk about a loss that no one really expected. Navy, granted, has only lost one game, and it was to Notre Dame, I believe on the road. So, that's obviously nothing to be ashamed of, but they really came in and stomped Memphis in their own stadium. I think that was pretty surprising. But Memphis, obviously still has a shot to. This is one of the better seasons that they've had in recent memory, and obviously they have some marquee victories on their resume that'll probably get them into a solid enough bowl game. But like you said, they really have to respond this week. They go to Houston and to Temple in the next 2 weeks, and those aren't easy matchups by any stretch. So they kind of have to put that loss behind them and move forward. Otherwise, they're going to, probably fall at the hands of, two ranked opponents.
Clemson also taking that big step toward a probable unbeaten season by taking care of Florida State as well. And most everyone now seems to think Clemson, if they're not number one, they're number two.
Yeah, and really that was the toughest portion of their schedule was, just getting past that Florida State game. I think the toughest 2 weeks, you could make the argument that Louisville and Notre Dame was the toughest 2 week stretch, but I honestly think it was later in the year when they went to NC State and then took on Florida State. But, the teams they have remaining are Syracuse, Wake Forest, and South Carolina. I don't think anyone envisions, them having any pitfalls, against either of those teams. Really top to bottom, this is a solid roster. We talked last week about how explosive that offense was, in terms of getting, past the 50 point threshold against, NC State. And they only put up 23 against Florida State, but they made them look good. And they really, happened when they needed it most. They put up, 10 points in the final quarter. And were able to kind of shut down the Florida State offense who, granted was without Everett Golson, the starting quarterback, but, that was a good showing, and Florida State's a quality team. They obviously always have an enormous recruiting class. So even when you take Golson out of the picture, yeah. Clemson had to defend against Dalvin Cook, who's one of the best running backs in the country. And they did enough to win. And this is honestly the best Clemson team I've seen in probably my time covering college football.
Oklahoma-Baylor, also a huge game this weekend. Baylor does get them at home, but this is a great opportunity for Oklahoma to do something for themselves. They're 5-1 in the Big 12, so they really do need this win.
I think we're going to learn a lot about, how Baylor's really going to respond without Seth Russell. I mean, I know that, the backup quarterback, Jared Stidham, had a pretty solid week against Kansas State, but really, I mean, he's not going to see probably a tougher defense than Oklahoma the rest of the way. With people like Eric Stryker, and that secondary is obviously able to produce turnovers. And if Oklahoma had lost that game to Texas, we'd be thinking about Oklahoma being in the you know, the national title picture. But Oklahoma's been very, very, very solid since, you know, that loss. They put up better than 50 points in every game, you know, since they ended up falling to the Longhorns. But this should be a good battle, and it'll separate the Big 12 conference and kind of, you know, see who the cream is of the conference. And, you know, we'll see if Jarrett can play up to the level he'll need to in order to knock off the Sooners.
And Josh, I just wanted to get your thoughts still on college football on probably the biggest story this week, which was sort of off the field when the Missouri football team said, we're not going to do anything until the president of our university steps down. On the surface, if that's all you know about it, that sounds maybe kind of bad. But as we kind of got more of the facts of the situation out there, it seems like a lot of people were on board with that. They got a lot of support, and the president of the university finally stepped down. But it was a changing moment and shows, I guess, the power of college sports when they get behind an issue like that.
Yeah, no, I think you wrapped it up nicely there, Neil. I think that there's a lot to glean from the story, and obviously a lot of important details will trickle out in the coming days. But you know, talk about a move that really set a precedent for the sport. I mean, if you know players feel strongly enough about something and can get their coach to buy in and support them, as was the case with Gary Pinkel. You know, they really have the power to just withhold their talent from the field, and I think it's something that we just assume that the players would never be interested in doing, you know, cutting off this opportunity for exposure to, you know, improve their stock in a potential, you know, future draft. But, you know, if they really want to, they can withhold their talent from the field and cost the university millions in revenue by not playing. And that's, you know, I believe the often cited number for this weekend's matchup with BYU is, I think they were paying the Cougars $1 million just to play, which is not, you know, at all atypical. You know, oftentimes there is something of a cash incentive for teams like BYU to be able to play these, you know, these major market programs in football and basketball. But you know, talk about an interesting move that I'm sure will shape the course of college sports, at least the big time money making you know, programs in future years. And it was, I've never seen a coach take that, you know, hard of a stance on anything. I think a lot of times they just kind of would prefer to stay in the background and let the details kind of, you know, figure themselves out. But, you know, Pinkel took a stand, and it'll be interesting to see what this does for college football moving forward.
You wrote a couple of articles on pro football. I just want to talk about one of those. I know our time's running a little short, and that's the Carolina Panthers. Really, I was thinking, do they really have a great shot at in an unbeaten season? And I'll be darned if you don't come out with an article that they have a pretty good shot at going 16-0. Is it good enough that the 72 Dolphins should be sweating right now?
You know, I still don't think so. I think I'm still kind of side on the side of history. But, you know, certainly they have the easiest schedule of any of the remaining undefeated teams for sure. And even with Denver having, you know, kind of imploded to lose their first game of the season Sunday, you know, New England still has to play them. And that was really the big separator for me was I knew that New England still had to play Denver. You know, Carolina has, you know, Tennessee, Washington, Dallas, New Orleans, Atlanta, the Giants, and the Buccaneers, you know, and, you know, a lot of those teams are nowhere close to the playoff picture. And, you know, right now the Panthers are doing just enough to win. So, so long as they keep winning, I'm sure the chances of them winning those future games will only increase. Obviously, I was just working with percentages in that article, but you know, I think that there's a lot to be excited about in Carolina country now, because you know maybe this could be the third team you know ever to run the table. I certainly think they have the easiest schedule you know to get there, but whether or not they'll be able to kind of run the table is, you know, that remains to be seen. And I guess we'll kind of see how the schedule unfolds.
Josh, as usual, I appreciate the visit. Great stuff. And we will post links to the articles, of course, within this show. Thank you so much, and I'll chat with you next week, all right?
Thanks for having me.
That is Washington Post contributor Josh Planos. Coming up on tomorrow's show, Ed Marlowe, the Paducah Sun, will join me. Be sure to tune in for that. And now here is the press conference audio from Monday's Mitch Stewart press conference at Murray State.
I know at the start of the season you were probably hoping for a better record than you have at this point, but a couple games that got away here and there, you're really not that far off from where you wanted to be, are you?
No, no, not at all. Me and Chris Boone talked about that last night. We sent up here later that late last night, and you know, we made that comment. I mean, you get maybe a couple of turnovers that don't hit the floor. You know, you look at the Tennessee Tech game, a couple of things go different there. You know, the UT Martin game, a couple of things. You know, the ball bounces a little different there. We've been in every ball game other than the SEMO game. The SEMO game, I never felt like we came ready to play that week, but. Other than that game, I mean, you've got a realistic shot to be sitting here, you know, with a record that puts you in the one of the top teams in the conference, you know, and I really truly believe that. And we're just, man, we're so close, and I think that's what's made it so fun this year. And I know that sounds weird to say with the record that we're at, but it's made it so fun, but at the same time, it's made it very heart-wrenching sometimes because we are very, very close.
How much have you been hurt by injuries?
We did pretty well leading up until about 2 weeks ago, and then it just seemed like instead of it all being spread out over a period of time, you know, normally you hope that you can spread your injuries out over an 11-game season. And, man, we rocked them along there pretty good for quite a while with you know, just very minor injuries, nick, a bump, a bruise here. And then all of a sudden 2 weeks ago, you know, it was like last week, you know, I told you we went into the game with 14. I told you we went into the game with 14 that would be questionable at all. It actually wound up being 15 because Joe Irby broke his hand Thursday night before the game. And it's just, man, it's just one of those things, you know. And you got to figure out a way to work around it and patch some things together and so on and so forth. And I felt like we did that. But, you know, it's football, man. It's a physical game. And, you know, you're going to have to work through some injuries, and we've had to do that.
Katie Humphreys is having a terrific season. He's close to or on track to surpass Casey Brockman's record for yards in a season. Have you been surprised by how well he's played?
No, not really. You know, I was obviously there was a lot up in the air, you know, after last year. There always is when you have a good player like that. There's a lot up in the air. You're hoping that they come back and they continue the success that they had the previous year. And that was the same, you know, that was the same thought process going into this year. We were hoping that KD could continue on the success that he had last year, but you never know. But I wouldn't say that it surprises me just from a standpoint of, and I've said this a bunch, that guy's one of the most blue-collar guys we got on the team. You know, I mean, he's every summer since he got to Murray, he stayed here every summer. He's found a way to stay with somebody, sleep on somebody's couch, find a job or whatever he had to do to stay here and throw, you know, with the receivers. And then on the flip side of that, you know, all those receivers. I mean, you're talking about Jeremy Harness, Janoski Davis, those are Paul Rice. Those guys have done the same thing. They found a way to get a job. You know, Janoski Davis, he works like three jobs during the summer. You order a pizza, there's a good chance he's going to be the one delivering it to you, especially on Monday nights. And it's because he wanted to stay here. He wanted to get balls. He wanted to catch balls, throw, lift weights, and all of that stuff. You know, it's starting to pay huge dividends for those guys. And I think that's you know, partly the success that KD's having right now. Now, you know, the trick to that is you know, you got Casey Brockman, whose stats he's about to surpass, and that's the reason why every day, every Sunday when we come in, Casey Brockman only wants to talk about the run game. You know, that's all he wants to talk about is how we're going to run the football. He doesn't want to throw it anymore. So if I can get Casey to stop sabotaging him, then maybe he'll have a chance.
On the defensive side of the football, do you feel like you've made pretty good strides this year?
I do. I really do. Just from a standpoint of effort, physicality, not as many busted plays, you know, just truly just busted plays and things of that nature. Now, have we had some big gains? Absolutely, you know, but most of our big games have not been from misalignments and things like that. It's been, you know, a dude jumping over our head and catching it and running the rest of the way in. And I can think of two right now that are just true misalignments, you know, just guys out of whack, out of gap. Things like that. And I think just from a standpoint of being more efficient, more productive on that side of the ball. I think that that's probably where we have improved the most is defensively. And I know that sounds funny because statistically and all of that kind of stuff, but just from a standpoint of talking with other coaches in the league and just being around our defense on a day-to-day basis, those guys have improved dramatically, especially from – I'll tell you the biggest thing, especially from a just a mindset kind of identity. You know what I mean? That just those kids, when they walk around the building, they've got a little bit of confidence about them. They've got they know that they're close. They know that they've got some pieces in place and that they're close. And one play here, and if we don't get out-gapped here, then we're okay, you know. And I think that's the biggest thing is it's just a little bit different air about those kids, and they're not walking around so beat down all the time now. And that's very, very encouraging moving forward.
My weekly theme question. What is the theme this week going to be?
Build. Build, you know, and it has a lot of different meanings. It's build off of last week, obviously the win, and I tell you the reason why I went that way is because it's been an awful long time since Murray State has come back and won from behind. You know, we did it SEMO last year at the beginning of the year, at a 4-point deficit. You know, but I mean, you're talking about being down 10 points in the fourth quarter. It's been a long time since we have actually stayed in the fight, kept throwing punches, and fought our way back to a victory, especially in overtime like that. You know, whereas most of the time in previous years, we would have packed our toys and went home. I think that was the thing that I was most proud of the other night was it wasn't pretty, it wasn't clean. There was a lot of things that we had to correct, but man, we kept the fight going. You know, and for the first time, I saw a little bit of gravel in our guts from the team standpoint of they were relishing the fight. They wanted to be in the fight. They thought that they could. They believed. You know, we talked last week about belief. I thought that they believed that they could get out of that place with a victory. So we want to build on that. We want to build on that mindset. We've told these other guys, you know, this is not, you know, you guys, this is not the season that we wanted. You know, from a wins and loss standpoint, but older guys, you need to understand you're building something. You're building something for these younger guys so that next year, and that's what we've got to continue to do because we've got two more weeks to do that. So we've got to continue building on that so that when these younger guys come back next year, they've got a taste of that. Because I'm going to tell you, there's no better feeling. There is no better feeling than the feeling you get when you do something like Saturday night, when that team's running out there on the field and coaches, man, they're jumping up and down and hugging and hugging kids and high-fiving and all, there is no better feeling. You know, and I told the team that after the game, I said, hey, you're going to get back in Murray about 9 o'clock. You know, I want you to go out, have fun and celebrate and all that kind of stuff, but you need to understand there is no feeling better than what you're feeling right now in this locker room. And we've got to build on that feeling and continue that feeling for these next 2 weeks.
Jesse just alluded to us that it's possible that Janowski and even Jeremy might be closer to 100% coming to this next game.
Yeah.
That being said, he's really stood out the last three or four games. How dangerous does that make your offense moving forward?
Well, you know, it's a thing, and I told the team this Sunday that the thing that was most encouraging Saturday was we had all of these injuries that I talked to you guys about because, you know, you guys want to know and you want to know how the team's doing and all that kind of stuff. But we didn't, as a team, we didn't focus on that. We weren't concerned with how many injuries we had. It was just whoever's going to step up into that injured person's place, you've got to go make plays. You got to be ready when your number's called. And that's what we focused on. And so I think from that standpoint, you know, you got guys like Jesse Blackburn who all of a sudden he has a night – which it didn't surprise me at all. I've known that for a long time that Jesse Black could play like that. But you got Ski beat up, you know, because Ski's not—he's not going to be 100% this week. He's not going to be anywhere close to 100%. He'll do the same thing. We'll shelf him Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We'll practice him a little bit Friday. He'll show up to the game, and hopefully, he's just—you know—he continues on like he's been. He's a Saturday player right now. But I do think Bobo will be back. Harness will be back. But somebody's going to have to do that again. Somebody's going to have to step up and make plays, and. That was what was so exciting the other night is you got Paul Rice, man. He has been just I mean, golly, he's been so solid for us. You got Jesse Blackburn. He steps up, and not only is he solid, he makes some plays. You know, he's out there jumping over and making some plays. You got T-Ray Malone. I mean, what a night that guy had. And we dropped him down at defensive end half the night. You know, we played with two D linemen and had him and Jalen Harrington as two defensive ends because we were beat up there. You know, you continue to watch Shipley on that side of the ball do some things. And you got Irby out there one-handed. You know, I'm watching Joe Irby. He's literally passed, and that was a good defensive front now. I mean, that was a very good defensive ball team. And I've got Irby out there, and he's like a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest. You know, I bet his right arm is just as sore as it could be because, I mean, he played with his right arm the whole time. Ethan Felton played more snaps the other night than he's ever played because we couldn't even get into 10 personnel offensively. So we had to stay in 11. And just, man, when you look at that as a team, it makes you awfully proud as a coach when you can come back in on Sunday and you watch that film. And now, again, do we have plenty of things to correct? Are we there yet? No, not even close. But, man, from an effort standpoint and from a buying in standpoint and having guys step up and make plays and those things, man, I could not be prouder than of those kids.
EKU's predominantly been known as a running team. That being said, they've been hampered by some injuries in the backfield, and they've had a quarterback stand up.
Yeah.
What do you see out of them offensively and even defensively coming in?
I'll be honest with you, I see them a little bit differently offensively this year. They've normally been big sets, ground and pound, and they may. I mean, they may come out and try to pound our fannies. I don't know, but normally they're a tight end set, and they're going to come down. And now they've got that quarterback, the transfer from Cincinnati. I'm not very good with names.
Tony.
Yep. He can throw it all over the yard. They've got a lot of run-pass options that they do with him, which makes it very tough to defend, where they're running with the offensive line, but they're throwing with the wide outs. So they're a little bit more spread. I even think they're going to some up-tempo this year. Be honest with you, they look very familiar to us. They're very familiar to what you see when you watch us now. But defensively now, I mean, EKU is EKU. They're going to look a lot like the team we just played. They're going to be very disciplined in what they do, especially up front. They've got the old boy from Ohio State, and he's made out to be. He's twitchy. He's big. I mean, he can roll now. So he presents some problems, and they're classic EKU. I mean, they're going to be a very solid football team. It's going to be a plate game for us. I don't even know if they're ranked anymore, but to me, this is a in-state rivalry, so it's going to be a plate game. I don't care if both of us wind up being last in the conference from here on out. Every time we play Eastern Kentucky, if we win, that's going to be a horseshoe on the wall for us because, to me, it's the state championship game.
Absolutely. Do you feel like somebody like Elijah Daniel, who's also, a big transfer out of Auburn,
yeah,
maybe he'll rise the occasion that
I mean, so.
They won't go against each other, but
yeah. I hope so.
You're
hoping that all your big-time playmakers – make big time plays and big time games, and this is a big time game for us. And it'd be a home game, so that'd be nice. We get to play them in our place, and you're hoping that all the guys that you're counting on, step up, right? And just like they did last week, we've got to build on that. We've got to build on that philosophy of, hey, this is your chance, this is your moment, your number's going to be called. And you've got to be ready when your number's called. And obviously, especially with us having to do some things at the defensive front and drop T-Ray down and drop Jalen down, when a guy like Elijah's in the game, he's got to go. He's got to get in the backfield, got to make some plays. No different than Bishop Woods, no different than Mason, no different than any of those guys, and no different than T-Ray and Jalen. Just because you're playing out of position, that does not give you a free pass. You got to go. You got to put pressure on the quarterback. You got to do what you're supposed to do, and that's at every position.